This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's Wild Oil of Oregano supports a variety of healthy benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. We're back from Thanksgiving, and we're recording another Q&A with Layla. How you doing, Layla?
Good, good. I had really good turkey. How are you?
You did? Yeah. I don't know, the turkey was okay, but I must say that Thanksgiving for me is a pretext to have everything that I don't have ordinarily.
Right.
I had a little pizza. I had six desserts.
Nice.
Thanksgiving. I had apple cider with like a splash of rum.
Oh, nice.
All the stuff that I just don't generally
do. The
one plus is I paid it forward because it's so far away that I had to stay at a hotel. And they have a little gym there, and I was able to work out.
Good for you.
So, I think I mitigated some of the harm. I'm so not used to sugar. I just felt really high from the sugar.
Yeah.
I felt like a buzz
from all that.
Yeah. Because I'm not used to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like I didn't want it. Once I started, it was like off to the races. Okay, I'll have a little bit of this, I'll have a little bit of that.
I definitely had stuffing.
I had the pecan pie. I had
pumpkin pie.
Stuffing. Gluten, I had gluten.
I survived.
But you know what's interesting is at the party, there was a lot of discussion and interest in gluten-free diets and keto diets. There were a lot of younger folks there, folks with now kids, and they're a little worried, they're in their 30s and early 40s, and the waistline is expanding, and it's getting a little harder to stay fit, and they're on low carb, and they're on keto.
Ooh.
And
Turkey and Brussels sprouts Thanksgiving.
One gal who was there, she experienced a lot of back pain. She had back pain surgery. She's on a keto diet to lose weight because it'll help the outcome of her back surgery. And she noted that her pain was substantially reduced when she was on the keto diet. Now, these other people said, get out of here. That's just your imagination. And I said, no, it really is anti-inflammatory. Mm-hmm. So, there's something.
It's anti-inflammatory. It could also be that this person removed foods that she was reactive to.
Pro-inflammatory foods. Another person weighed in with this opinion. She was a skeptic. She says, I don't know, when we were growing up, we didn't have this gluten-free. We didn't have, like, keto. We were fine, and we turned out fine. And I said, yeah, but look at you. I said, you're in your 60s, and you're all, you tell me that you can't use your thumbs, and you're sitting there with a pillow there, and your back is killing you.
Oh, it's like, boy.
You're inflamed. You could try one of these. And she said,
A lot of people's thumbs are hurting, but they fail to recognize that it may be a tendonitis from texting.
Yes, it could be.
And things like that. A lot of people.
Repetitive stress injury.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
So, the other thing that's going on is I interviewed, and I don't know, it should be up by now. I interviewed a guy from the Council for Responsive Nutrition for one of our podcasts, and it should be posted now. Brian Womack.
Mm-hmm.
And did you know that labels are going to change as of 2020? And it's going to be a sort of a slow rollout, but by the end of
supplement
labels, yeah. And there's some subtle changes and there's some big changes. So, for example, they're going from IUs. We're used to IUs for vitamin A and vitamin E and vitamin D.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to micrograms. Now, it's not so consequential for vitamin A because vitamin A Yeah, it's a little consequential because, you know, typical vitamin A would be what, 5,000?
5,000, maybe 2,500, maybe 3,000.
Okay, so let's say 5,000. Yeah. That 5,000 will become 1,500 micrograms.
Mm.
So they have to read the label.
Mm-hmm.
The equation is take the IUs and multiply by 0.3, basically cut it into a third.
Okay.
Okay. Vitamin E is mm-hmm. not that much different, but it changes a little bit.
Mm.
So your 800 international units of vitamin E will now be 536 milligrams of vitamin E, but...
You mean micrograms?
Milligrams.
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 Oh, milligrams.
This
okay.
indicates milligram.
Okay.
Yeah, this is more, the vitamin E is a little more...
Right. Okay.
Stronger.
And vitamin D?
Yeah, is vitamin D is going to be the one that's going to confuse people the most, I think. Because let's say typical dose of vitamin D, 2,000 international units,
okay.
right?
That's
intermediate because some people taking 5,000, some people taking less, 1,000.
Yeah.
There is a conversion that is multiplied by 0.025.
Mm.
Which is roughly 1/40th, right? That's 1/40th.
Yeah.
1/40th.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
1/40th.
Okay.
So 2,000 IUs becomes 50 micrograms.
Oh.
And in the future, they're not going to have redundant labeling. You're going to have to do the math in your head.
Do the math in yourself and figure it out. Okay.
Folate, interesting, is going to be from micrograms to something called DFE, dietary folate equivalents.
Oh.
And so
I'm seeing that on some labels already. Some labels already have DFE for folate. Interesting.
Yeah, so folate is going to be 400 micrograms and 667 micrograms of DFE.
Yeah.
And so little change. There's going to change some of, for example, the vitamin E, I think, the vitamin D requirements went from 400 to 800, I think.
Hmm.
That's going to be in terms of the requirements.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if I'm right on that. Let's see, vitamin D. Yeah, it went from 400 IUs to 800 IUs, which is, get used to it, 20 micrograms.
Wow.
Okay, so it's 1/40th.
1/40th.
So that's not too, the math's not too hard there, because to take 400, you take 1/4 of 400.
0.025.
Right?
Okay. 0.025. All right. Okay. So these are the changes that will be happening come the new year, come 2020?
They're going to be, you're going to see that on
okay.
labels of vitamins. So listen to that podcast. They have some resources there. There's a website, belabelwise.org,
mm-hmm.
which is the website of the Council for Responsive Nutrition,
belabelwise.org. Okay.
And there they have a little video on the changes. And I mean, a little changes like they don't have RDAs anymore. They have what are called daily values, DVs.
Yeah, DVs.
They changed the terminology. So
yeah,
RDAs.
It's on the nutrition facts label.
So, for example, in their infinite wisdom, they changed the DV for magnesium from 400 milligrams. They raised the ante to 420 milligrams.
Oh!
Probably still inadequate.
Still inadequate, but going in the right direction,
right.
Thankfully.
They lowered zinc and selenium. They lowered copper. They raised manganese. They lowered chromium, which
really?
Is a dumb move. I don't know.
That is a dumb move. We need more chromium, but we need a little less manganese if we're getting too much.
They added one.
Huh.
This is interesting. The choline used to not be listed. Now they've said you need 550 milligrams, which is almost a half a gram of choline every day.
Now TMAO people are going to go nuts.
Well, that's true. I mean, there could be...
what are they going to say?
It's complicated.
What's
yeah, the choline rate, you know,
choline?
TMA.
Stop eating fish.
Yeah.
And
they also have a dietary value for added sugars, which should be 50 milligrams. I mean, it's not like you're going to have a deficiency if you don't have the 50.
Oh, yeah,
I'm sorry,
please.
50 grams. I'm
50
sorry, 50 grams.
Grams.
50 grams?
Wow, that's an ounce and a half.
That's too much on a low carb diet. Your added sugars are 50 grams, you blow it out right
you're
out
blowing it. That's way too much fruit.
That's the daily value for added sugars. I don't think
you don't want
I think maybe they're saying
that
Americans consume so much sugar that would be an improvement. That would be
true.
An improvement.
That's probably that could be about 4 ounces of soda.
Yeah. They cut the vitamin A from 5,000 to 3,000 IUs, which translates to 900 micrograms. Hmm. So vitamin C, they raised from 60 to 90. So there's some changes.
Good. I'm glad vitamin C is up.
Yeah. But, you know,
it's often underrated.
These results, one size fits all recommendations are not applicable. But anyway, you'll see some changes to your multivitamins because the labeling will be changed. So, you know, be aware of that as a consumer.
Okay. Good information.
Yeah, it's I think important to cover that.
So belabelwise.org to read more about that. From the Council for Responsible Nutrition.
And there's a video there. There's a nice little explanatory video.
Great.
So, by the way, we're supposed to answer questions. So we have a bunch of questions in the mailbox. Let's remind people that radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. Mm-hmm. Hey, we're going to go right through Christmas. We're not taking a break. We're going to keep answering questions right through the holidays. So,
because we need a break from the holidays to do podcasts.
Right. We got to get away from all that.
We got to get away from all that.
Right. All that, you know.
Oh my gosh, Christmas.
What's
cookies.
The alternative? Listen to Christmas carols all day long? Forget about
boy.
It. And Charlie Brown specials?
Right, right. Oh,
not
Charlie
happening.
Brown specials are fun.
Yeah.
Okay. We have an email from
this
Carol.
This is our recreation here.
Yes, this is our recreation. Absolutely. We have an email from Carol. Hi, longtime listener here. I thank you both for all the good information I've learned from you. Carol, thank you. I am an almost 73-year-old woman in good health. I'm 5'7", 130 pounds.
Very good, Carol.
Thanks to all the dietary information I've learned from you. I recently went for my annual checkup and the doctor said I should have a screening DEXA. I was surprised at the results. I have osteoporosis in my hip, a negative 2.5.
That's just on the cusp.
Yeah, just on the cusp.
So that's the best possible case.
Right.
In fact, there's some controversy over whether that represents osteoporosis or extreme osteopenia. Now, osteopenia really is not a condition. It's a natural thing.
It's what happens after you're 35.
Bone density decline. It's like,
that's what
thinning
happens.
Hair and, the crepey skin. And, that it just happens.
Her spine score is a negative 1.9, so no
that's
osteoporosis
good.
There.
That's
it's
good.
Very good.
Yeah.
For 73, that's great. Noted is there is clearly a curvature and degenerative change of the lumbar spine.
What else is new?
Which can falsely elevate bone density estimation.
Well, that's an interesting statement because when you do a DEXA and you're older, you can get a falsely reassuring lumbar spine picture because of all the arthritis makes your bones look more dense.
Mm.
So we can sometimes see a disparity between the hips, which are really bad, and the spine that looks pretty good, but that's because the spine is arthritic. But hey, guess what? If you look at the spine of anybody over the age of 50, you're going to see some changes and some deformity and more or less
you just
arthritis.
Made me sit up straight.
Just depending.
You just made me sit
I'm
up straight.
I'm slouching, but you can identify people based on the appearance of their spine. So in people who have a lot of inflammation, it's going to be worse, of course.
Right. So Carol says, I ordered the Strontium and Bone Builder, as you suggested.
Good.
What else can I do to help myself? I'm unsure of taking drugs often given to build bone. Any suggestions? I should add that I've never had a fracture of any kind, and I have no problems, no pain in my joints, no arthritis.
By the way, this person got an insurance policy because they recorded a question for our radio program.
Oh.
So I answered this on the radio show, but let's take a shot at it here because it's a different forum.
Yeah.
Other things that can be done. Well, first of all, I think strontium is the real...
it's the real deal.
Yeah, mainstay of bone enhancement. Other things may slow bone loss, but strontium is what really is a bone builder.
Hmm.
So she's on the right track. I mean, she could take olive leaf extract.
She could take Ostera.
Ostera, which is a hops derived. By the way, hops is getting a lot of good press these days because it's really anti-inflammatory. Mm-hmm. It may be good for the heart, the brain, the bones.
Yeah.
Also,
that's not an invitation to go drink beer. But interesting.
Yeah, that interestingly, when I did put that on social media, I said, echoing Homer Simpson, I wrote it the way Homer Simpson says it. Beer.
Beer. Oh, my goodness. Carol, I would add strength training. Mm-hmm. You're very fit. You're 5'7", 130. I would call that like perfect. And you're 73. Do some strength training.
Now, you are sort of the exercise maven here in this practice because I tell people to exercise. Then I send them over to you. You talk about diet.
I give them exercise prescriptions.
What would you say to a person? Can you just, it doesn't really lend itself to radio or to podcasts, but can you describe the type of exercise that would be beneficial?
Strength training. Absolutely, strength training. Okay. Carol, start doing squats every other morning, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Now, do squats.
How do you best do squats?
Deep knee bends.
Okay, but you have to be careful with technique because knees are a problem for some people.
Exactly. She has no problem in her joints or anything. Mm-hmm. Of course, Carol, get clearance from your doctor. Make sure everything is fine. And do deep knee bends
to fatigue. But even a squat to 90 degrees where you don't go beyond 90 degrees will burn your thighs.
Absolutely.
And put some pressure on your lower spine.
Right, right. And if you feel like you're not balanced, hang on to a chair or the counter. Use your own body weight first. Do squats to the point of fatigue.
How about with an exercise ball against the wall?
An exercise ball against the wall is a great idea. Another thing I would do is push-ups.
Okay.
Push-ups. Get down on the floor and do push-ups.
Or planks.
Or planks. Definitely do a plank because that's going to help your core. It's also going to strengthen all of those deep abdominal muscles, really stabilize the spine.
Okay.
That might be the most important exercise for the core.
Okay.
Is the plank.
Okay.
And if you can, and a plank is getting on the floor to the top of a push-up.
For people who don't know what a plank is,
it's the top of a push-up.
But it's a staying and timing it, maybe doing it for 20 seconds, then 30 seconds.
20 seconds.
And going for a minute, maybe.
Right. And when you are able, go from the top of the push-up down onto your forearms so that your upper arm is perpendicular to the floor. Mm-hmm. That's a tougher move right there. That's a tougher plank. Opt to get to 30 seconds if you can. That can be really tough on the first several tries.
Right. But women are a little less good at that, I notice, because they have less forearm strength.
Yes. Yes, or less upper body strength altogether.
Yeah. Right, right.
And it's good for the spine to do that.
Right.
Those are the two most basic but very powerful exercises that include a whole lot of muscle groups that stress the right muscle groups that then stress your skeleton in the right way. And it keeps you functional. Mm-hmm. Keeps you from ever becoming feeble.
Right.
Take up yoga. That's another form of strength training. Just do it. When you're in Warrior Two for 2.5 minutes, your thigh will be burning. It will be burning.
Yeah,
not to mention the crescent and up and down and then
it seems
reach
easy, but
behind.
It's one of the hardest things is to stay in that position with your arms extended and you're in a bit of a squat, you call it,
Get into chair pose. Chair pose looks easy. It's not. Mm-hmm. You get into a chair pose with your arms above. Try to hold your hands together, but without clasping them. It's harder. Hold that for 2.5 minutes.
Ooh, I hate the chair pose.
I know. But it's so effective.
Right.
Carol, these are the things you can do to build bone.
Yep.
And it's in the research that to strength train 3 times a week is optimal rather than twice a week. Most people go to their trainer, twice a week, like a Monday and a Thursday.
Right.
But if you do this every other day, like a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, you're better off. You keep more of your lean mass that way.
Okay.
According to the science.
Good.
Carol, thank you for listening. Thank you for the kind words.
Okay, so she got
an
answer on my radio show, and she got an answer this podcast. So.
Yeah. Okay. We have an email from Marie. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I've been seeing an endocrinologist now for about 25 years for hypothyroidism, and I'm taking Synthroid for most of that time. I recently saw a family medicine doctor for blood work. All of my blood work is fine, and I attribute that to your excellent information over the years. Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. The new doctor said my thyroid results are totally normal on the dosage I currently take, but would like to see me twice a year to check thyroid levels, as this is the way he does it. Can you kindly tell me if you think this is necessary to be seen every 6 months to check my thyroid?
Well, you have some compassion for the endocrinologist. He needs to make a living.
This is the family. This is actually the family doctor that wants to check her. The endocrinologist only sees her once a year.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So
I'm just kidding.
Who's right?
I'm just kidding. when I monitor thyroid patients, I ask that they come in every 6 months. Mm-hmm. Some patients, they're long-distance patients. They're steady players. Everything's been fine. I'll tell you why. A couple of reasons. One is just to make sure it's the right dose of thyroid. But often people reach a point in life where they don't change and they're very stable and it's the same dose. The same dose is very boring. But with thyroid medication, you have to make sure that, especially if you're aggressive with thyroid medication, that the patient doesn't develop, a atrial fibrillation or palpitations.
Yeah.
So you want to check the pulse. I've had, a couple instances in my career where people come in and I say, okay, let's check your pulse. And it's like very fast or it's irregular. Mm. And that means that we have to adjust downward. I mean, what I tell patients is, you start a patient who's like 40 on thyroid medication, it could be fine until they're 65 or 70, but it's very likely that you'll be on less thyroid medication when you're older because you may not be as resilient to it. Mm-hmm. You may require less. A lot of people shrink as they get older. They lose weight. They become sarcopenic, so they don't need as much thyroid medication.
Yeah.
And it becomes more dangerous. So one of the most common causes of atrial fibrillation is hyperthyroidism. We don't want to do that.
No, we don't want to do that. So Marie, thank you for your question. Good health to you.
I think it's reasonable.
It's reasonable.
Yeah.
Okay. We've got an email here from Pauline. I've had hypertension for at least 50 years and was on medication to control my blood pressure. Now my doctor recommended I take my pressure with a kit, which I bought. I watch, I record my numbers, all of that. Then my doctor recommended a cardiologist, even though my numbers were good. This heart doctor wanted me to take a kidney scan, which I never had done before.
Well, this is sort of very by-the-book medicine. Mm. It's like, okay, if your blood pressure is high, one of the reasons could be that there's some kind of unusual kidney problem that is causing filtration issues with the blood that causes, in effect, the blood to back up. And, then you have, but this is an obscure, that's just dotting your I's and crossing your T's.
Right.
I mean, most hypertension is what's called essential hypertension, which means we don't know why it occurs. It just occurs that you're older and, there's not a clear-cut explanation for it.
Right, right.
If you have, like, a kidney problem, there's a reason. If you have, there's certain hormonal conditions that cause hypertension. You sort of play that rule-out game, but these are relatively uncommon causes of hypertension. I don't know. I don't have the eyes on this case. I don't know why there's a need for such esoteric testing.
Yeah. Pauline says the cardiologist said, I had a problem with my kidneys, but nothing that had to be addressed immediately and to see him in 6 months. I'd like to know what vitamins and or food I should now be taking that could help me keep any problems from getting worse.
Well, I don't know what's going on with her, really, that has them concerned. Certainly for hypertension, we want people to optimize their weight. Some people are sodium responsive,
that's
not everyone.
True.
Not everyone with hypertension.
Not everyone, but we got to watch the salt.
Sometimes.
And so much of that sodium is in processed food, so just getting rid of that is a big help.
And a low-carb diet is going to do wonders, or even a ketogenic diet is a great way to...
Reduce insulin,
which is one of the major drivers of high blood pressure.
Right, because it causes our bodies to retain more sodium.
Yeah.
And a keto diet or a very low-carb diet is very dehydrating, which is what you want.
You pee like crazy that first week and you lose 6 or 8 pounds. That's not losing
it's
fat.
Water. It's water.
You're
dehydrating.
Yeah.
You're actually going into a water status where you should be.
Yes. Yeah.
When we eat a lot of carbs, we store that carbohydrate. Right. We store a lot of water.
So many women complain like, I feel bloated.
I'm bloated.
So get on a low carb diet and you will diurese naturally. Mm-hmm. You don't need Lasix.
Exactly.
It'll help you.
Exactly. So Pauline, it really depends on what that problem is with your kidneys. Maybe you want to check in with a registered dietitian, a nutritionist. Maybe you need to be on a renal diet or something like that.
I don't know what they're seeing with the kidneys.
They're seeing on the scan. Yeah.
Did she have a high creatinine or something like that, which predicts a higher risk of eventual renal failure?
Is there protein in the urine?
Microalbumin. Microalbumin is a very interesting test. Let's talk about that for a second.
Yeah.
That's a test that, when someone who's hypertensive and diabetic, there's dual stress on the kidney, and you can actually see this even before you start to become protein leaking.
Yeah.
The microalbumin is a very sensitive test which shows stress on the kidneys that causes the glomeruli to become leaky, in effect, leaky glomeruli, which is a prelude to kidney deterioration and damage.
Right, right.
So, which also, once you see that high microgammon, you go, oh, this high blood pressure is very consequential. You know, things that signal whether hypertension is consequential is look in the eye, see if their eye changes, look at the heart, is the heart enlarged?
Yeah.
You know, is there an abnormal EKG or an abnormal echocardiogram? And also look at the kidneys, but how you can look at them is you can do a scan, but you can also do the
albumin.
Mm-hmm. And you can also obviously look at follow the creatinine for that.
Right,
so
right.
These are consequences of hypertension. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hypertension can sometimes be relatively innocuous. It's not doing a heck of a lot, although it might, you know, any high blood pressure puts stress on your brain tissue and your brain circulation. People who have borderline hypertension that's not treated, even those people might have a higher risk of dementia eventually.
Yeah. And Pauline, if your cardiologist says you have a problem with your kidneys and to check back in 6 months, you should have also gotten a referral to a kidney doctor, a nephrologist.
Not sure.
If that is the case.
Not sure
Or is a cardiologist going to follow the kidneys?
I don't know. Maybe he's a one-stop shop for everything.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Maybe.
Anyway, okay.
Pauline, thank you for your question.
We need to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. Give us a preview of what we're going to talk about in part two, please.
Is there any long-term negative effect to taking aspirin therapy?
Okay, good question. We'll tackle that in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin. She's our nutritionist in residence. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. And we'll be right back with more of your questions.